Nightmare Town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Mandemonium.
And I guess, like, we don't really have a lot of things to talk about other than Happy New Year!
Yes, Happy New Year. We made it.
Debatable.
Yeah. We're here. That's the term I like to use.
Yeah, that is definitely a truth there. Did you guys do anything fun for New Year's?
No, but I never really do anything fun for New Year's. We just watch The Twilight Zone and eat food.
That sounds fun. We also watch TV. Like, normally, Theo likes to watch the ball drop, and every year, he waits till, like, the last 10 minutes, and then it's just him trying to find a ball. And it aggravates me so much, and I was like, I really have no interest in watching that. It's like, I don't care. And then, directly at midnight, I ran outside and just yelled Jumanji.
That's great.
I was like, open the doors! Open all the doors! Get that shit out of here!
We actually almost missed New Year because we were both just kind of like spacing out watching TV and looked up at the clock and we were like, oh, it's like 30 seconds until the New Year. Well, cool.
Yay! 2021. Yay. We're already like 6 days into the year and there's fucking riots at the Capitol.
Just shit's hitting the fan everywhere.
Well, here's to 2022. We'll try again next year.
Try it again next year, champ. You're out of tokens. You've lost.
Son of a fuck. So, but anyway, before we talk about that debacle, our episode this week is called
One Fine Day.
Which was not yesterday.
Nor really again, many days. The past year. For me, anyway.
I'm kind of pissed about the rioters that happened yesterday, because it somewhat ties into my topic this week which I am going really? To be going first. And it made me question if I actually wanted to do this topic, especially since, like, the last episode of my topic was such a bummer.
Yeah.
But this one does involve rioters, but it's fucking hilarious. So,
you can segue. I mean, you're going first.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. So I actually want to talk about baseball.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's out of a completely different topic.
A little out of left field. For our podcast.
Oh, yay. It really is. It really, really is. I messaged Dane over from the Nerd It Through the Grapevine podcast because he's a sports fan. And I was like, do you know about this topic? And he was like, no. And I was like, yes. So the first time I ever heard about this, because I'm not a sports fan, like, unless I actually know someone personally that's playing, I have no real interest to watch a sporting event.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that's just like, go sports! Hooray, sports ball!
Exactly, and, you know, both my brothers were triathletes growing up, so I was at every baseball, soccer, football, what else did they play? Basketball game. So, and like, I played sports growing up. I played t-ball when I was younger because my brothers played and my dad was a coach. I played basketball because my brothers played and my dad liked going to the games. I played softball because my brothers played baseball and my dad liked going to the games. I think there might be a little bit of a pattern here.
Yeah, I think so.
But then, like, I stopped playing sports my freshman year of high school, and then after I got out of high school, I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai for, well, I did jujitsu for 2.5 years and Muay Thai for like half a year because I didn't like getting hit.
I will say jujitsu is the only sport I've ever like actually enjoyed doing actively.
I loved it. Like, I had a lot of fun doing it, and I've considered going back to it, but that's also where my eating disorder started, because it's such a heavily weight-based sport. So I feel like going back would be kind of dangerous for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then later, I mean, I went from jiu-jitsu to ballroom dancing, and then I did tap, which led into swing dancing and blues dancing for a while. And then eventually I went into roller derby from there. So
I feel like we traveled very similar paths and just kept missing.
Probably.
Just ever so slightly.
Until we actually just lived next to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and then I did roller derby for 4.5 years. So I'm currently sportless. But apparently I like the violent ones, so I just have to find something else.
You'll find something. There's plenty of violent sports out there. Rugby, high lie. Curling can probably get pretty intense. I don't know.
But we're not talking about me playing sports. We are talking about the game of baseball. And as far as I could find, there have been about 130-ish forfeits in the 152 years baseball has been a professional sport in the United States.
Huh.
152.
That's crazy. Crazy
sauce. And I want to talk about one forfeit in particular. The 1974 game between the Cleveland Indians and the Texas Rangers, which resulted in a forfeit to the Rangers, despite the Indians having tied the game in the ninth inning with two runners on base, with the distinct possibility of winning the game and ending the Rangers' 9-0 season thus far. So why would a team that was about to win forfeit? Do you want to guess?
Were they, like, cursed or something? I don't know. I can't get. I'm not sure.
It was because of their fans and a promotion for 10-cent beer. So this is the debacle of 10-cent beer night. And before I get into the game, I want to talk... the first time I ever heard this, it was actually when I first started listening to The Dollop. And it's like their 15th episode ever. And I was laughing so hard at their episode, I was crying. I was at work whenever I used to work with adults with developmental disabilities. I was at a public park with a client. I had one headphone in, and I was laughing so hard that tears were streaming down my face. But before I get into the game, I want to talk about 1974 Cleveland. Cleveland, Ohio, which is, you know, from my birth state. I was born in Ohio. I was raised in Tennessee. But it's still one of those, if someone does the OH, I owe them back. Because it's ingrained into me.
You just have to.
Oh, yeah. Cleveland had once been a city that was on the up and up. At the end of the 1920s, Cleveland was just behind Detroit as the fourth biggest metropolis in the United States, so the city builders took that into account when they designed the city, as well as the first publicly financed sports complex, the Cleveland Stadium, which could hold almost 80,000 people.
Wow.
But, yeah.
I didn't know it was that massive.
Yeah, it's gigantic. So, but sadly, the builders were a bit off on their estimations, and the city would never grow to the numbers they had anticipated. This leads us into the financial depression Cleveland was suffering in the decades leading up to their forfeit to the Rangers. In 1952, Cleveland wasn't doing so bad due to being a hub for factories and heavy industrial operations, and since it was the 50s, those factories had no problem dumping all of their waste into the Cuyahoga River that wound its way through downtown, resulting in it catching on fire for the ninth time.
Jeez.
Yep. And though that fire only raged for 30 minutes before it was gotten under control, it did $1.5 million worth of property damage and received no national coverage. It's one of those, like, Ohio has cleaned up their water systems some, but I still remember going to visit family in Ohio and crossing the Ohio River, and it just smelt bad.
Ew,
Like, we were
really?
over the water on a bridge, and you could smell it.
Gross.
It was quite disgusting. In 1969, the Cuyahoga caught on fire again, this time only doing about $15,000 in damage to a rail bridge. But this time it caught national attention and would eventually lead to the formation of the Environmental Protection Agency in the 1970s, and later the Clean Waters Act of 1977. So, I mean, like, it caught on fire again, and environmentalists flocked to Cleveland.
They're like, we gotta do something.
And so, around this time, more than 600 factories and heavy industrial operations fled Cleveland, and about 177,000 inhabitants relocated to find work. As you can imagine, times were hard, so not a lot of people were wanting to go out to the ball games. By May of 1974, the Cleveland Indians beat the Red Sox 4-1 in front of just 4,234 spectators. The Indians' board of directors got together and tried to find a way to put asses in seats. Recently, the Texas Rangers had hosted a successful 10-cent beer night, so they thought they would try the same. And
Great.
as Yeah. But as it would happen, the Cleveland Indians would be playing the Texas Rangers at Arlington Stadium in Texas just 6 days before the Rangers would join them in Cleveland. And during that game, there would be a bench-clearing brawl. So during that game, second baseman Lenny Reynolds slid into second base a little too hard, and Indians players thought that it was bullshit. So the next time Randall was up to bat, pitcher Bob Johnson gave him a little chin music. You know, he just aimed for the head a little. And on the next pitch, Randall bunted down the first baseline and knocked Johnson to the ground when he tried to tag him for the out. Randall was clearly out of the base path, and the hit was purposely violent. The first baseman, John Ellis, ran over and punched Randall in the face, and both teams erupted from their dugouts for an all-out brawl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Shortly after this had calmed down and the teams were heading back to their dugouts, Rangers fans threw beer and food on the Indians, and catcher Dave Duncan had to be held back by two teammates as he tried to climb up into the stands while angrily yelling at the fans. So he was about to go fuck somebody's shit up real bad.
Yeah. It's like, all right, guess we're riding.
Yeah. Well, like, this was 6 days before the Rangers were supposed to come to Cleveland, so the wounds were still really fresh, and the sports writers for Cleveland were not helping the situation. They were whipping sports fans up into a frenzy by saying that they were going to get revenge, and there was even a cartoon of the Indians' mascot, Chief Wahoo, which is an incredibly racist. We understand and we acknowledge that it is fucking racist, but it was the 70s, so. But he was wearing boxing gloves with the caption, "Be prepared for anything." And then June 4th, 1974, the Indians board members were expecting about 12,000 fans to arrive for the much anticipated game and, of course, the beer promotion. There was some debate on just how much beer fans were getting for the measly sum of 10 cents. Some sources say 8, 10, or 12 ounces of Stowe's beer. There were a few things that the upper management had not considered with their beer night. One, it was early June, so colleges had let out. Two, fans could arrive 2 hours early to games and concessions were open. Three, people would pregame. So there were people showing up to this game already hammered. And the last thing that they didn't think about was
They didn't
that they
really
had
think this
missed.
through, did they?
They didn't. They really didn't. But they had missed thwarted their promotion and would be limiting fans to 6 beers per purchase. Not per person. Per purchase. And there was wow. nothing stopping someone from buying 6 beers, turning around, handing them to a teenager, and buying 6 more.
Yep. And also 6 beers.
6 beers. Like, how do you like, even carry 6 beers? Like, were they also giving drink carriers?
Yes.
Because that's so much litter. Like
Edward Beer Hands.
I don't think they had Edward 40 Hands. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You do?
No, yes. I've definitely seen it played. I've never partook, but...
I mean, I don't drink beer. I have a friend that does Edward 40 Hands a lot. And I'm like, oh, honey, no.
All I can think about is if I were playing that, it's just like, suddenly my nose would itch really, really bad or something.
You gotta use that forearm.
Yeah. It's never good enough, though.
It's like, I have to pee.
I'd have to, like, have a finger stuck out of the duct tape.
just scratch. Just so, to scratch this was also a time... This was also the time when you get into a game for like 50 cents. So people were getting in. So people were getting absolutely hammered on like $3.
Which is a good time for them.
Oh, yeah. As I had said earlier, the Indians management thought they would be getting about 12,000 people with the promotion, but 25,134 people attended the game that day.
Oh my gosh.
And for some ungodly reason, a bunch of them had brought firecrackers and were setting them off in the bleachers.
Of course.
So to set the scene, before the game even started, there were random explosions. The air was thick with gun and weed smoke. People were already drunk. And somebody was banging a war drum.
Oh my god.
So it already feels like a war zone, right?
Chaos. Yeah.
And now we can talk about the game.
I didn't even now we the can. Game yet.
Yes. I had to get all of that done first. So the Rangers took the lead at the top of the second inning on a home run by designated hitter Tom Grieve. Just a few pitches later, a heavyset woman sitting near first base jumped the wall, ran to the Indians on deck circle, and bared her enormous unhindered breast to appreciative applause.
Whoa, all right, lady.
She then tried to kiss the head umpire before being escorted from the field. She would be the first of many people who would run across the baseball diamond that night. Yeah. Grieve hit his second home run in the fourth inning, and before he could even round third, a naked man ran onto the field and slid into second, probably getting dirt in places unsuitable for speculation. Then he just ran off before security could get him.
Is this just like an episode of South Park or something?
No, this is before South Park was even a thing.
I can't believe this is real.
So then Indians batter Leroy Lee swatted a line drive back at Rangers pitchers Fergie Jenkins, and Jenkins couldn't get out of the way and caught the ball in his stomach, and as he writhed in pain, the fans began to clap and chant, "Hit him harder."
Oh my god. Poor Jenkins.
Uh-huh. In the fifth inning, a father and son duo in the outfield got into the act, jumping the wall and mooning the Rangers outfielders. The players watched, hands on hips, shaking their heads as park security chased one hooligan after another across the diamond. So, when there was a close call on third, Rangers manager Billy Martin came out to argue with the officials. Now, we need to take a moment to talk about Billy Martin. Because this man was an enigma all on his own. So, Billy Martin, he was the Rangers manager, but before that, in like the 1950s, he had played for the New York Yankees. And he was the Yankees enforcer, so if like they wanted somebody to get hurt, Billy was the one that did it. But Billy played second base. Do you know how hard it is to hurt somebody from second base and make it look like an accident.
Yeah.
Like, he would, there was one quote from him that they had said in the dollop where, like, someone was running towards him and he had the ball. So instead of tagging him out, he just cocked it back and threw it at the guy's face, knocking his hat off and breaking the dude's glasses. At one point, he, while he was a manager, he got into an argument with an umpire. He picked up dirt and threw it at the umpire.
Oh my gosh.
And then later tried to get a friend to take a hit out on that umpire.
All right.
Yeah, no, dude bro was like, he was a major alcoholic. Like, he was always drunk. He liked to get into bar fights. He would openly admit to having his team cheat, and then he would get fired for it. And then he'd get rehired because apparently he was just like a super amazing manager.
Oh.
But holy shit, dude.
Just happened to be great at his job, and they're like, God dang it, we need to keep him.
God damn it, Billy.
Him with all this bullshit.
Yeah, and like his big thing was that he would antagonize the other team to try to like get them off their game. Mm. And so like him running out to like argue with the official, it was something that he would normally do. And whenever he did, there was a large number of plastic cups that just like flew onto the field, like still full of beer. So yeah, no, he was just, everyone was just trying to pelt him with beer. And when he was returning to the dugout, he was like blowing kisses into the stands and just antagonizing the crowd more.
He fed off the chaos. Maybe he was an energy vampire.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. He died. What was it? He died on Christmas Day. I don't remember what year it was, but it was during an ice storm in New York. And he drove into something at the end of his driveway and killed himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But back to this. As the night wore on, the crowds grew bolder and packs of fans frequently scurried across the outfield. One man tossed a tennis ball into the center field and then ran after it. whenever he got... He brought a tennis ball to a baseball game and then played fetch with himself.
He was just, like, ready.
So
he knew what
after
kind of
he got
it
his...
was going to be.
Oh, yeah. So after he threw the ball back into the seats, he led park security into a little jog. And at one point, he stopped and hugged another fan. And security got that guy, but the dude that threw the ball was able to jump back into the stands and then just fucking disappear.
Of course.
Because at a... Yeah. And, so, but while, like, security was taking the other guy away, they just started getting, like, the beer, like, they stopped throwing beer. Well, they were still throwing beer, but then they also started throwing things like rocks and batteries, golf balls.
Oh.
Anything that wasn't bolted down. And then also around this time, you know, it was 6 beers per purchase. So the lines for the concession stands were getting super long. And they weren't able to, like, keep up with the demand. Like, they had enough beer, but they didn't have enough people to give the beer. So one of the people in management suggested that they drive the beer trucks behind the outfield fences and just have people start lining up there.
Oh.
And so they took 3 beer trucks over there. And to run the beer trucks, they had 6 teenage girls.
All right. It's just more things.
Yeah, because it was the 70s. So, you know, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anything goes.
6 teeny tiny little teenage girls, the same size and age as Minnie, with all of these super intoxicated people. They're just like, that was a lot more beer. But so the girls weren't able to keep up with the demand either. And at one point, the drunks picked up the table that the girls were using to fill cups and threw it over the trucks. And the girls just noped out of there. They're like, no, I'm done. And they
good left. Job.
And then it was free beer night. It wasn't even, yeah. So cool. they were just taking hits off the kegs.
Oh my god.
The public announcer had to remind spectators not to litter the field. And as soon as he said that, just more cups went onto the field. And the grounds crew had not sat down since the second inning. Yeah. No, and like any time that the grounds crew went into the outfield to try to clean things up, the crowd just used them as moving targets. Another woman jumped out of the stands waving, and she didn't flash everybody, but the crowd was like hollering for her to. And whenever the ushers arrived to like make her leave, she attacked them. And so they wound up forcing her to the ground, and that prompted a storm of boos and shouts of police brutality.
God.
From the same people that were shouting, hit him harder earlier. And then, yeah, there was somebody threw a firecracker into the Rangers' bullpen, which is where the pitchers would be warming up. And so the head official, his name is Nestor Kallik, ordered both bullpens evacuated and that the pitchers were just going to have to warm up on the mound, which it was going to take longer for things to go underway. And then Mark Hargrove, who was one of the Rangers that played first base, people in the stands, whenever he went out to, take his position, he was pelted with hot dogs and beer. And he estimated that it was about 20 pounds of meat laying around him.
Why would you waste a perfectly good ballpark hot dog?
And also somebody threw a half full jug of Thunderbird wine at his head, and it missed him by inches. And this was the first time that like a player had been kind of attacked, so they were starting to get a little worried. By this point it's like, yeah, there's stuff going on, but it was nothing that was directed specifically at the players. Like, someone threw firecrackers into the bullpen, but it wasn't going to hurt anybody really bad. Not like a half, like, it's a gallon jug. So, yeah. And it was probably made out of glass. So somebody threw a glass jug at a dude's head. Sorry, I ran out of my notes. There were so many streakers that people were abandoning their clothes in a pile in left-centered field and were just walking around the outfield, just basking in the abundance of sunlight Cleveland provides, bearing it all. And then, like, a group of fans along the third base side began removing the padding on the left field wall. And the guys that had been trying to clean the field up had to stop what they were doing because they almost got the padding off. Either through numbers or sheer force of will, they nearly succeeded in taking a large chunk into the stands. The grounds crew abandoned their trash collection duties and mustered to save the padding, an effort that occupied them for the rest of the night.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. In the seventh inning, radio announcers Joe Tate and Herb Score watched as baseball fans in the crowd gathered their families and left the stadium like refugees. So they're like, I think we need to leave. And then in the...
It's getting a little too much now.
In the 8th, they noticed board members of the Indians' front office leaving the ballpark and doing their best to look casual about it. So, in the 9th, the Indians mounted a rally, scoring 2 runs to tie the game at 5. So, after the Indians had managed to tie the game and had a runner on second, you know, ready to take back over, the 9th inning, like, it's almost done, a 19-year-old fan named Terry Yerk ran onto the field and attempted to steal Texas outfielder Jeff Burrow's cap. So he just, like, ran over and grabbed the guy's hat, and I'm sure this kid is smashed out of his mind, and he just kind of froze after he got it, and he dropped the hat. And around this time, Burrows is turning around, and the kid, like, bit down to pick up the hat. Burrows tries to kick him, and he trips. But the thing is that from the Rangers' dugout, they can't see their player anymore. All they see is a kid run over, and then their player is gone. So they're like, fuck, shit has hit the fan. So Billy Martin looks over his players, and he is like, let's go get them, boys. And so they grabbed their bats and ran onto the field to go protect Burrows. They get to the outfield. Wow. They see Burrows. He's confused but unharmed. And by this point, all of the happy streakers are gone. And now the Texas Rangers are surrounded by 200 drunk, angry fans that are wielding of knives, chains, and clubs fashioned from portions of the stadium seats that they had torn apart. And there were more people spilling out of the stands at this point. So the 25 Texas players quickly found themselves surrounded by 200 angry drunks, and more were tumbling over the wall into the field, and the Texas Rangers had been ambushed. So the riot begins. Basically, like, these guys are just fighting for their lives at this point. Like, they, yeah, they have bats, but there's dudes with knives.
Yeah.
And so the Indians manager is watching this, and he realizes that he's either about to see baseball players kill fans or fans kill baseball players. He orders his players onto the field. The bat racks in the home dugout emptied, and the Indians mounted their own rescue. Okay, so I want us to actually read the transcript from the broadcasters. I'm going to be Tate. I want you to be Score.
Okay.
And I'll be perfectly honest with you. I just don't know what to say.
I don't think this game will continue, Joe. The unbelievable thing is people keep jumping out of the stands after they see what's going on.
Well, that shows you the complete lack of brain power on the part of some people. There's no way I'm going to run out onto the field if I see some baseball player waving a bat out there looking for somebody. This is tragic. The whole thing is degenerated into just... Now we got another fight going on. Fans and ball players. Hargrove's got some kid on the ground and he's really administering a beating.
Well, that fellow came up and hit him from behind is what happened.
Boy, Hargrove really wants a piece of him. And I don't blame him.
Look at Duke Sims down there, going at it.
Yeah, Duke is in on it. Here we go again. So, by this point, there are 50 angry professional athletes on the field attacking fans with bats. And so it slowly turns the tides. It slowly turns the tides. And the baseball players are able to, like, get off the field. But the way that they do that is that the Indians are supporting the Rangers and they're, like, getting back towards the dugout to get to the tunnels. But the way that they did this is that, like, the bench players, the guys that normally just hang out on the bench, they formed a rear guard like they were in the fucking military. So you have, like, the main players go out and they're, like, they're fighting, and then they have the bench players in the back basically to have a defense so they have somewhere to get out of there. And so after the players leave, everyone just starts taking anything that isn't bolted down. So we're gonna read the second part here.
I just love that these announcers are just having a time with this. They are doing their jobs, and they are just announcing what they're seeing.
They're still commentating.
So.
Oh, and before we even get to that, so the Indians' management had not thought to request additional police for the 10-cent beer night because they thought it was just going to be like 12,000 people. They didn't expect 25,000 people to show up. So guess how many police officers were there to take care of the 25,000 drunk assholes in the stands?
I'm going to say like 10.
They were 50. There were 50 cops for 25,000 people. And like they didn't call for backup because if they did, then all those drunk people would have just went into downtown Cincinnati, or not Cincinnati, would have went into downtown Cleveland and just wrecked shit. So after the teams left and there was no one else to fight, the mob just started taking everything, and this is what Score and Tate had to say about that.
They've stolen the bases.
The security people here are just totally incapable of handling this crowd. They just, well, short of the National Guard, I'm not sure what would handle this crowd right now. It's unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
People go back into the seats and others jump down to take their place.
The bases are gone. And in an attempt to soothe the rioters, the organist started playing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
To try to soothe them.
The organist was hilarious. Like, oh shit, I know what's gonna do this. Take me out to the ball. Oh god.
Like maybe they'll start singing along in their drunken stupor and like put down their like projectiles or something.
Put down their weapons that they fashioned out of the stadium.
Just turn into a good old fashioned musical.
So, Chief Umpire Nestor Kalik, so he got hit in the head with a chair, and then he looked behind him and there was a hunting knife in the grass laid down just behind his leg. So he forfeits the games to the Rangers and ran off. But yeah, so the Indians were able to escort the Rangers to their bus and they just left.
So they still declared a winner in the baseball game?
Yeah, well, like, the Indians forfeited. So they forfeited to the Rangers, and the Rangers won because of that.
But, like, why wouldn't they just, like, we'll just do this another time?
Yeah, no, that's not what happened. So the Cleveland Police Department was soon called, and they arrived, and they basically had to use their SWAT team to clear everybody out. At the end of it, 7 people had to go to the hospital. Let me pull you back up, because we're at the end of the story. So 7 people had to go to the hospital for minor injuries, and 9 people were arrested. Out of 2,500... 9 people were arrested for this.
That's...
Could you imagine being one of those 9 people?
That's just unreal. I can't believe that.
Just sitting there like, what the fuck? I punched one guy. That's it.
Yeah. You're like, this one over here was like... Just like trashing the place.
you listen here, Buster. You listen. I punched... What the fuck? But, yeah, 9 people arrested, 7 people had to go to the hospital for minor injuries, and the next day, so the Indians' management called in the people that had suggested the 10-cent beer night, and those guys were like, fuck, we're gonna get fired so hard. But instead, they sent them to Wyoming so that way they could see how they did their 10-cent beer night, and they had 3 more after that. The next one being on July 18th of the same year.
Did that one go any better?
It did, but they limited it for 4 beers per person.
Okay.
Yes, per person, not per purchase. So they could only have 4 beers the whole night. But that is the better. debacle of Tencent Beer Night.
Well, that was just a ride. I'm sure that certainly was a fine day for the chaos-loving people in that group.
Oh, yeah. So I got my information from The Dollop. Their Tencent Beer Night episode is just phenomenal. It's still one of my favorites. I also got information from letsgotribe.com, thebaseballalmanac.com. I got sent to the link that I used for most of my information by a Reddit user named Monsieur Valentine, and that link went over to espn.com. I also got some of my information from the StarTelegram.com. So, but those will be in the description sheet below, and that way if you guys wanted to go and listen and watch this stuff on your own, you are more than welcome to do so. I don't like baseball, but I love this.
I don't have any words. I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna follow that up. That was just such a solid visual story of something that actually happened, which is just wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know me, I love me some history, so yeah. No, it was funny because I was talking to Mama Boom, and she doesn't listen to the podcast because it's just not her thing,
not her cup of tea,
but she politely asked me what I was covering this week, and I was like, oh, I'm talking about baseball. And she was like, oh god, did somebody get murdered at a baseball game?
Probably. Yeah, most likely. Can't be too sure.
But no, that's not what I'm covering. So. But anyway, guys, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Okay, and we are back. Also, I forgot to mention at the end of my story, the bases were never found.
Of course they weren't.
So there are three families in Ohio just passing the bases down generation to generation. Ooh, I need to get a hold of my cousin Lanny and see if he knows about it, because he would have been about 16 at this time.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. So.
You should.
Yeah, I'm going to get a hold of Lanny and be like, hey, bruh, question.
I would love to hear a follow-up.
Where were you on the night of June 4th, 1974? Did you go to a baseball game? So. Okay. Well, it is now Amanda's turn. So, regale me with something, friend.
All right. So, I'm just kind of reading from a couple websites today. Nationalday.com and BestLifeOnline.com just had some great info today. So, sharing from them. So, when I thought of One Fine Day, my brain came to mind. I wonder if there's any weird holidays, because, you know, there's Talk Like a Pirate Day and, you know, along with the regular holidays and whatnot. Apparently, May 3rd is National Paranormal Day.
Ooh.
Which I found rather interesting. I couldn't really find exactly any history behind why this was just deemed National Paranormal Day, which is kind of spooky in itself that I couldn't find that much info on it other than it is May 3rd. But, I thought, I might celebrate that this year now that I know it's a thing. And I thought if
May is a great month.
Yeah.
My birthday's in May.
That makes sense. So, I thought, if there was anybody else out there that likes to celebrate all the random holidays, I know I definitely celebrate Pirate Day, like I said, always celebrate it. Maybe you could celebrate Paranormal Day by playing some paranormal games. At your own discretion. But I'm going to be reading a few, and stop me if there are any that we have actually mentioned on the podcast in the past before, because I know we've mentioned a game or two here or there, but I don't think we've talked about any of these. So one of the first games is called the picture game. You need rope, a pair of scissors, a bunch of small mirrors, an empty glass and something boozy to fill it, and an old school flash camera. A camera phone is not going to work for this. So once you have all of the supplies to capture a real ghost on film and partake in one of the best scary games, claims this website, it depends on how much you're willing to suspend your disbelief. So how the game works is you will make a circle on the floor with the rope and put the glass in the middle, filling it with a little bit of alcohol. Don't know why, I guess demons like alcohol. Not really sure. So everybody sits around the circle holding one of the tiny mirrors. They don't specify how tiny the mirrors need to be, but you need a bunch of tiny mirrors.
Like a bunch of little compact mirrors.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
You can get them at the Dollar Tree.
Yeah, pass them out at a at a sleepover and be like, all right, guys, we're going to summon some ghosts with these.
Oh my god, I cannot wait for Little Man to have his first sleepover. Just saying.
Just be like, all right.
So like, oh, pizza time's over. Now time to summon a demon.
It's okay. We'll close it up and leave the demon here when we're done, though.
No.
Hopefully. Or send it home with one of the kids you don't like that's at the sleepover.
Oh, I got one in mind.
See, you already know. You're already ready. So with the lights out, you take the mirrors and the reflective part, you kind of point it towards the ceiling. Everyone closes their eyes and then they say, I trust you, in unison. You just chant, I trust you. The door is open. Please come in. Pass around the camera and everybody gets 3 turns taking a picture in the dark while saying, I caught you, out loud. At no point should anyone enter the circle made by the rope. And that's it. Will you catch a glimpse of a ghost in one of those pictures? We're not telling. You'll just have to try it and find out.
Gonna have to talk to Shazam about this one.
on if we should try it. I do have some old film cameras now.
Yeah, but you're not seeing physical people.
I'm going to say, I'm not going to play, but if anybody needs to borrow a working old camera to play this terrifying game. I bet
Katie
game.
And Zoe would play with me. The gals over at Haunter, I barely know her, would.
They probably would. I'll lend the supplies and interview you guys after.
Okay.
So the next game is called the Midnight Game.
I know about this one.
I hadn't heard of this one. Apparently it's based on an old pagan ritual that was used to punish lawbreakers. So, relevant. So the truthfulness of that is kind of wishy-washy. Like, it's not, you know, for sure, but a lot of people think that that's what it's based on. Anyway, it's kind of terrifying. So here's what's involved. You write your full name, including your middle name, on a piece of paper and place it in front of a wooden door. Then you light a candle and place it on top of the paper. Wait until just before midnight and then knock on the door 22 times, timing it so your final knock happens exactly at the stroke of midnight. Then blow out the candle and open the door. No thanks. So,
no thank you. I'm good.
Now you've unleashed the Midnight Man into the world, some sort of supernatural creature that's going to be hunting you for the next 3.5 hours. Yeah, that's right. Hunting. You have to walk around your dark house with a candle until 3:33 a.m. That's when the Midnight Man disappears. Try not to be caught. If your candle blows out, that means it's close. If you can't get it relit, you have to surround yourself with salt. If you don't get the salt shaker in time, the Midnight Man finds you and... It's kind of unclear what happens, but I don't want to find out.
Nope, that is a master sword stabbing somebody situation.
Yeah, so...
Just saying.
This next one...
Hard pass on that one.
is also, I mean, all of these are incredibly terrifying. So this one's called The Fortune Game. This is a Japanese fortune-telling game. The original name was Suji Ura. I'm sure I butchered that, but it's ancient folklore that's been practiced for centuries. All that's needed is an ordinary comb, something to conceal your face in a crossroads, so an intersection somewhere, perhaps. And then, let's see. So you start the game out by walking out to the crossroads just after dark, either alone or with a friend. Don't know why you would choose the alone option when you can bring a friend with you, but whatever. You stand near the center and you make the comb speak by running your fingers across the teeth. Then you repeat these three lines. Suji Ura, grant me a true response. Conceal your face and then wait and wait and wait until someone approaches. If nobody comes or you're approached by a friend or someone you know, your request has been denied by the spirit realm. But if a stranger walks over without revealing your identity, politely ask them to tell you your fortune. Listen quietly, and when they've finished and have disappeared back into the night, walk home with your newfound knowledge. Did you get good news or horrifying news? Who exactly was this stranger? A dead relative or some messenger from the beyond? Maybe just a creep? The mysteries are exactly what makes this game so enthralling, according to this article.
I'm good.
But now, if playing with strangers isn't your taste, you can also play hide and seek alone.
That sounds so sad.
So, it's super simple. You just get a really creepy doll. I have plenty of those laying around. And you summon a ghost to inhabit it so that it chases after you. There's
nope,
also...
hard pass. I will... Nope.
Yeah,
nope.
All right. Absolutely nope and out of that. So there's a catch, nope. Though. When the possessed doll is it, they're not just trying to tag you. The doll will actually be intent on stabbing you instead. But yeah, so
I will punt that bitch out the door.
That's all the rules for hide and seek alone. You just possess a doll, and then they try to stab you.
Fun. Well, here's the thing. Maybe make some friends. Make friends.
Yeah.
Go find real people friends. Well, you can, and play hide and seek with them.
You can take a friend and go play the fortune telling game instead. So then you can you and your friend can just be approached by a random stranger and told an ominous fortune.
Stranger, danger.
Okay, well, so I guess if people aren't your thing... You can play another game called the Cat Scratch Scary Game. Great name. So basically you lie on your back on the floor with your head resting on a friend's lap. So you get a friend this time. Then your friend recites one of two stories involving a cat, all while gently rubbing your temples. They're long stories and include creepy lines like, there once was an old lady who owned a cat. The cat was very nice. It meowed and purred. One day, the cat got hit by a car and died. When your friend is finished, stand up and pull up your shirt. If this ghoulish ritual worked correctly, your back should be covered in red claw marks. How this happens is anybody's guess.
So, parts of that story sounds nice. Like, I would love to lay on the floor with somebody rubbing my temples and telling me stories. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
But no.
Just not the Freddy Krueger scratches on the back. I kind of want to try this one, though.
Fine.
So, let's see. A couple more here. I liked this list in particular because a lot of these games were ones I hadn't heard of. I'm sure some of our listeners have definitely heard of them, but a lot of them are ones I had never heard of, so I was intrigued. This next one is called the Triple Mirror Game. Again, with the multiple mirrors, I guess because, you know, you can open portals with multiple mirrors and things. You need no less than three, as well as a big white candle. Also, you can't have any scented candles, because apparently ghosts are repulsed by eucalyptus and spearmint odors. Good to know.
They have allergies. That's all you... They have allergies. It's fine.
So, maybe we can summon them with some, like, Zyrtec or something. So, you're going to light this candle and put it on the floor. Then you're going to arrange the mirrors around the room so that they reflect the image of the door from one mirror to the other. This takes a lot of meticulous tilting and adjusting until you finally get it right, but it's supposedly worth the effort for when you get a glimpse of some bona fide ghosts and spirits that have been inhabiting your room. You'll only see them in the third mirror, and sometimes only in flashes. But then I would have to just, like, nope out of my house forever. I'm fine exactly. with the ghosts like, if I don't know they're here.
I know Charlie's here, but he's good people.
Yeah, he's alright.
I don't want to know about any others. He just chills. It's fine. Sometimes he turns off the lights. Sometimes he turns on the lights, and it's like, dude, I was sleeping.
You know, I cut it out, man. I'm trying to relax.
Man.
So, this next game is called the Shoebox Telephone. It's, the article says, it's like getting a phone call from dead people, but without any of the long-distance charges, and without the use of a Ouija board. So that's something, I guess. This kind of sounds like a homebrew Ouija board, though, however. Here's what you do. You write a letter to somebody who's passed away with a very specific question for them. So nothing vague like, how you doing? Your ghosts don't want to answer those questions. So next, you're going to run a string between two cups... just like when you made little telephones in your forts when you were little, and put one of the cups inside a shoebox. Then place that shoebox, the phone, for whatever ghost you're trying to contact in a dark closet. That's it. Time to go to bed and wait for the call. You're not actually going to hear a phone ringing, thankfully, because that would just be terrifying. But according to legend, you're going to have a dream in which a phone is ringing, which, frankly, should probably be enough to wake you up. When that happens, get out of bed. I've got goosebumps reading this. That's phones and ghosts. It's just creepy. So you get out of bed, and without turning on any lights, you go find your super dark closet you left your ghost phone in. You sit down next to the cup, whose drink should be leading into the closed closet door, and pick it up. Put the cup to your ear and listen. At this point, you're either going to hear nothing, in which case your experiment failed and it's time to go back to bed, or you'll hear the voice of somebody who's left the mortal world, in which case you can either sit and listen to what they have to say or drop the cup and just run and scream.
Yeet that thing into the ocean and no thank you.
Yeah. So, I have actually kind of heard of this one. elevators kind of freak me out anyway, just because they're janky, I feel like. Have you ever heard of the Elevator to Another Dimension game?
I mean, all elevators take you to different dimensions, but go on.
Well, yeah, pretty much. But, so, to get to another dimension via elevator, you need to be very specific with which floors you travel to first. So you have to begin by finding a building with at least 10 floors. So, you know, a city.
None in our town.
Yeah. And an elevator. So that's the easy part if you live in a city. You get in the elevator.
Man, we have to go to Nashville.
Yeah, I know. make sure you're alone. And you press the button for the fourth floor. When you get to the fourth floor, don't get out. Instead, press the button for the second floor. From there, take the elevator to the sixth floor and then back to the second floor. If you've not, like, vomited from motion sickness by now, like, I guess your game's going good. So, allegedly, once you get to the fifth floor, a mysterious young woman will step inside. Don't look at her, and for the love of all that is good, do not say anything at all to her. As some fans of this mystical game have warned, she's not what she seems. Instead, just stare straight ahead and wait to see what happens next. Which honestly seems like a waste of a perfectly good, scary, interdimensional time travel elevator game if you're not even going to interact with the demon that's entered the elevator with you, but whatever.
You don't interact with demons!
If she takes you to the 10th floor, don't get out. You'll be stuck in the other world forever. Just wait until the elevator eventually makes its way back to the first floor, then get out and get the hell out of the building. How do you know you actually rolled an elevator with a ghost? You may never know, other than the chill that ran down your spine when a person, a possibly dead person, stood next to you in an elevator, and you waited, your lips trembling, to see what might happen next. Ugh. Okay.
I mean, I feel like out of it, I mean, I enjoy riding elevators, and I have probably done that combination of numbers before.
Yeah, just like, without even realizing it.
It's like, I just want to keep riding the elevator.
So this is the last one I have. And this one particularly freaks me out because dark bathrooms, just no. Just absolutely no. Mm-mm. No. Bloody Mary and Candyman, Bloody Bones, scarred me as a kid. Don't do dark bathrooms. The scene in The Grudge with the cat boy in the bathtub, like, just terrifying. So this is called the bath game for you people that want to just, I don't know, hang out with a demon in your bath or something. I'm not really sure. Actually, I haven't read how this game goes, but we're going to find out together. Because I was just freaked out enough that I was like, I'm going to wait for this one. So this game is also known as Daruma-san. It's a great activity for anyone who's ever thought, I'd love to take a long, relaxing bath that actually turns into the most horrifying night of my life. If that sounds like you, here's how to play. Pour yourself a nice warm bath and turn out the lights. Climb in and sit facing the faucet. Close your eyes tight and begin repeating these words out loud. Daruma-san fell down. Daruma-san fell down. Eventually, they say, a mental image will pop into your head of a Japanese woman standing in the bathtub. I have got, terrible chills. I'm so creeped out by this. Like, I'm scaring myself here. Anyway, you'll see a Japanese woman standing in the bathtub who quickly falls down and hits the faucet with her face, causing her to lose her right eye. Without opening your eyes or turning on the lights, get out and walk straight to bed.
Then, no.
Yeah, right? So, the next day, the ghost of that woman who died in a bathtub is going to just be haunting you. Everywhere you go, she'll be there. You might never see her, but you'll always have the weird sense that somebody is standing right behind you. Your best bet at seeing her is to look over your right shoulder for some reason. That's where most people have caught a glimpse of her. And when you do, shout at her, Kita. This is Japanese for, I cut you loose. It helps if you swing your arm down in a chopping motion just to make sure she really understands. If you catch her in the exact right moment, it'll be enough to scare her away. If not, you might just have a ghost stalker for the foreseeable future. So, good luck with that. Totally your fault. See,
it would be totally your fault. And also, it's one of those, I take baths in the dark all the time. Like, when I have a migraine, it's amazing.
So, funny enough, I actually, literally recently just bought some, little, tea light candles and stuff because I, thought the idea of, making the room nice and dark and just illuminating it with candles and having, podcasts and my, incense going and a book would just be wonderful, but now I'm just can't go in the dark bathroom because there's demons in there.
Well, only if you summon them like a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Hopefully I didn't just summon a demon by reading it out loud. My bathroom's right across the hallway, but there's no water in it and I'm not sitting in there bathing.
Yeah.
Or facing the faucet. So also, I'm good, right?
How awkward would that be to accidentally, you're naked. Why are you summoning demons?
Right, and, my bathtub's tiny. There's not space for, me and a whole ass lady.
I told Theo that when and if we ever buy a house, I was like, I want a bathroom where the bathtub is deep enough to cover boobs and knees at the same time.
I just want one of those.
I've seen it. I know they exist.
I want one of those giant showers with the, big rain, shower thingy, and it's the big glass. Like, I really want one of those. And yes, one of those bathtubs would be wonderful. Just something that I can, like, fully elongate my legs in, and also, like, my whole body is, like, covered in the water would just be nice.
Because usually, like, in the bathtubs and places that you rent, you have to choose whether your knees are under the water or your breasticles.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. I want both. Exactly.
I don't like being cold.
Exactly.
Boobs and knees.
I did recently... No, go ahead.
I have a friend, this was years ago, it was before Theo and I even dated, but we went to the lake, and we were at their parents' lake house, and of course we were drinking, so we were highly intoxicated, and I just happened to wander into a bathroom, and they had a gigantic tub, so me and my other friend, who was also intoxicated, got in our bathing suits, and we're just, like, chilling in the tub. And then after a while, they came to find us. They're like, what are you doing? I was like, this is amazing.
It's a giant tub and I love it.
It's like, I live here now. I live in this tub now. I did wash the tub after I got out because we had been swimming in the lake and we're disgusting.
I had that lake water on you.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff is disease ridden.
But yeah, no, it was me and one of my friends, and we were just in this tub. We weren't touching at all, and was like up to collarbone in water.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
That just sounds fabulous and legendary.
It was. I was also really drunk, so I might be misremembering that, but still. But you were saying?
Oh, totally not that interesting or off subject, kind of off subject, but I found on Amazon, it was an impulse buy one night, it's like this little, like, suction cup thing that, like, sticks over, you know, where, like, the emergency drain is in your tub, where it's like, you can only fill me up this high, mm-hmm. and it, like, drains out, and so then your tub's really only, like, halfway full. So I found on Amazon they have, like, a thing that you can just, like, stick over that, and you can get it, like, you get, like, an inch more of water, and it really makes all the difference when you're trying to relax. It really
does. How did we get on to just talking about bathroom stuff?
Just to make myself feel better about the fact that there's hopefully not a demon just chilling in my bathtub.
There's not. There's no one-eyed Japanese woman chilling in your bathtub over your right shoulder.
Hopefully. If not, I'll just have to cut her loose, I guess.
I'll take the Master Sword to her and actually cut her.
Hey. We did just get new steak knives today, and we have a knife sharpening kit, so.
There you go. Stab her.
So we're good to go.
Yeah. All right, friend, it is actually your turn to do the spinny.
All right.
Because we don't have a hat currently.
Yes.
But if you guys have your own stories to tell or ideas for the hat, go ahead and hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com over on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, working on the Reddit thing still, haven't decided that, or you can go on over to our Patreon, where we have three different tiers if you wanted to join those. Again, thank you to our Patreons, Nerd It Through the Grapevine and Kimmy. We absolutely love you guys, and thank you for your continued support. Or you can go over to our website, which is nightmaretownpodcast.com.
We're a .com.
We have an
now.
M now.
Yes.
We are. But yeah, so those are all the ways that you guys can get a hold of us over on our website. You can also go and leave a story there, and you can click a nice little box saying if we can read it on the podcast or not, because we would love to do more Tales for the Neighborhood Watch during the new year. I think that's our goal. More listener tales.
All right.
But, friend, what's our next episode?
Our next episode is going to be animals.
Ooh. I have no idea what I'm going to cover for that yet, but we'll figure
it
out.
I already have one random thing come to mind. It's not going to be enough for the full story, but, like, it's definitely going to be brought up because, like, #never forget. Because no, it's a funny story. But we'll find out.
You'll have to tell us next time.
On the next episode.
It's like, don't tell me now. All right, guys. Well, we're going to head off of here, but thank you so much, and we'll see you guys. Wait, no, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but...
Until next time.
Tell us a story. Bye.
Bye.
I was getting off that like I was getting off a phone call.